Hour number two, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren, Donick, and Chase. What is going on? Chase McCabe hanging out at Pete and Terry's Tavern at Bridgestone Arena. Predators and the Bruins tonight on the ice in the first game of the John Hines era here for the Nashville Predators. If you're just tuning in, if you've been living under a rock, let me catch you up. Peter Laviolette was fired as the head coach of the Predators yesterday, along with associate coach Kevin McCarthy. They announced this morning John Hines, who was most recently with the New Jersey Devils, will take over as the new head coach, the third in franchise history, which is just crazy that they've been around this long and only three coaches. It is only the sixth coach that David Poile has hired in his illustrious career as a general manager. So he will take over and coach his first game tonight. There's a press conference scheduled for 11:45 that you will hear right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, in which David Poile will introduce new coach John Hines. But the team's sending out a press release this morning and making it official. So with all that said, I want to take a moment and say thank you to Peter Laviolette. So I try to be as real as possible when I'm on the air. I try and take you all kind of behind the curtain on my journey as a broadcaster, and I hope you appreciate it. I try to be real. So when Peter Laviolette was hired, we were having a sports fest at the then brand new Music City Center. And I was very early on in my career. I remember coming down here for Barry Trotz's farewell press conference. I knew Barry Trotz from another avenue. I went to high school with his daughter, and that's kind of how I knew him. But I didn't cover him that long as a coach in media. And so Peter Laviolette was kind of the first head coach that I really got to know and to cover. And so we were doing a show. It was one of my very early shows of actually being allowed on the air and hosting. And Peter Laviolette did his first interview with us. And I remember sitting next to him and shaking because, oh, it's the new head coach and I'm nervous. And he could not have been any nicer and any more patient with a young broadcaster asking him some probably bad questions. But that was my first interaction with him. And then a few weeks later, Ryan Porth and I had started a show called The Cheap Seats on Saturday mornings. And we actually came down here and did an interview with him. And it was more of the same. He was always patient. He was always kind to me, and I will always appreciate that. So these times, you know, are tough, and like I've said, I think it was the right move. Change was needed. They needed a new voice. But that doesn't take away the fact that, you know, I still respect Peter Laviolette a lot and thank him for his time here. So, Lavi, if you're listening, wish you nothing but the best, and hope that, you know, the future is bright for you and your family. And if you decide to stay around Nashville, then we hope to see you around. So with all that said, John Hines has been named the new head coach for the Nashville Predators. I want to hear from you. I want to know the pulse of the Preds fan, because we've been getting some texts, we've been getting tweets, but if you want to call in and talk to me and let me know what you're thinking about this move, love to hear from you. 615-737-1025. Let's go to Mike in Gallatin. He wants to weigh in. Mike, what's up?
Hey, Chase. So I was listening last night to you guys' initial reactions on Preds Insiders, and when you guys were talking about Peter DeBoer, I was like, man, that was the kind of is it considered splashy? I would consider it a splashy hire that would have been the coach that I was somewhat anticipating. But the more and more I thought about it, this coach made sense with some of the ties and stuff that it had to the team. My initial reaction is not, it's like either like woohoo or bad. I don't know enough about the guy to really truly boil it down and say that this is a great move or a bad move. We have to give Poile a chance. But my thought process in this entire thing is that Poile's now had his hands on three coaches.
Yep.
Are we gonna say that issue in that we need to give him a lot more of the credit for how things are going poorly? Because again, like this move, some people might say it's called a little bit rushed. It might felt was a a little bit of a dicey move. Again, like a guy who's led us to the playoffs the last 5 years to move on to a coach with a losing record. Now, again, with a poor team, but again, it is what it is. But at some point in time, we got to point the finger back at upper management. And I got a strange feeling that this could be that move right there, whether good or bad.
Hey, Mike, I appreciate the call. I think you make some very good points because, look, when you make a coaching change, you have now put the blame on somebody because that's how this works. You have now said, all right, Peter Laviolette, it's on you. So we got to make this change. We appreciate your time. But when you do that, and if things don't change, then everybody starts looking at the players, and ultimately they start looking at the guy that drafts and signs the players. So I do think that David Poile now is going to be looked at a little more closely, as he should. He is aware of that. But he's also been doing this for a very long time. He's only had to hire 6 coaches in his career. And as a lot of you said yesterday on Twitter when I tweeted that I was surprised that he made the midseason move because he hasn't done that a lot in his history. Y'all were telling me about Brian Murray in Washington in 1990. That was 1990. 1990. I was 3 years old when he did that. Let that sink in for a second. He's done it twice. So when I say that it's not a big part of his history, it's not. He doesn't make coaching moves. So that's why I was surprised. At the same time, it's probably the right move. I believe it is the right move. Can John Hines take this talent on this team? Can he be one of those stories that maybe the first time around as a head coach wasn't a good one? And so he takes over. He comes in here, and all of a sudden he starts to win. And I'm not saying they have to win the Stanley Cup this year. I know a lot of you would like to see that. All of you would like to see that. David Poile would like to see that. You're looking at the St. Louis Blues because it happened last year, and you're going, oh, yes, yes, here we go. They made the coaching change, and they're going to make a run. They might. They very well might. But they might not. We might determine that, okay, they're going to have to shake this roster up a little bit. They're going to have to move some guys. Some of these contracts might have been a bad idea. We're going to find out. And I think we're going to find out pretty quickly on what this is going to be. But you also have to be a little bit patient because it's not going to just fix itself overnight. Keep in mind who they're playing tonight. They're playing the Boston Bruins. Boston is one of the best teams in the league. So if you're looking for this magic turnaround, I don't know if it necessarily begins tonight. It's going to be a tough game. Now, is there a different energy in the room because this is the first time that most of these guys have gone through a coaching change? Sure. It could get something different. I mean, they could rally for John Hines and, you know, pull it off tonight. They did beat Boston on the road in Boston. But it's just a wait and see. This is going to be a process. John Hines doesn't know this roster. He's got to learn it. Just like they don't know him. They got to learn him. We say hello to Willie Donick, who has joined us. And, Willie, I know it's been a wild 24 hours or so for this organization and for you. You guys go get 3 out of 4 on the road. But ultimately, Peter Laviolette, no longer the head coach, John Hines in. Your initial thoughts on the move?
Well, there's a lot that's happened, for sure. So, what specifically should we start with? The decision to make a change or who the change is? Because I was just down in the locker room, and I just watched the morning skate. We had our meetings this morning. And, you know, during the morning is when you find out who the replacement is going to be. And so this is the process here of making a transition to a different head coach. I think, you know, the decision to make a change, that's always a very, very tough thing, and that's not something that David Poile has done a lot over the years. I think you could sense that there was pressure as they neared the halfway point of the season, and some of the things, you know, kept coming up. Their tendency at times to get in a muck during a game, in a rut where they would have some things snowball on them. And so I don't know when they made the decision, but I can tell you that being on the plane yesterday and then talking to the guys, nobody knew this was coming until after the team arrived back home.
That's what I was wondering. Did this happen after they got back? Was there a discussion on the plane?
Yeah, no. When we got off the plane, everybody was there.
Was David on the trip?
I did not see David Poile on the trip. He was in Dallas. He was not in California, I don't believe. So it is really been it's not been 24 hours,
sure.
Right? It's been more like, you know, 12 whatever time it was late last evening when the news started coming down the pike, and I think all the players were taken aback by it. So they come in today, and as you were just saying, you're playing a really, really good hockey team.
Sure.
I think it'll be important. We're gonna meet John Hines here. You know, he'll introduce himself. I mean, he has literally only introduced himself to the team. He was not out on the ice for the morning skate. He did address the team, I think, before the morning skate. But, I mean, he's just going through the process of getting acclimated. So I know it'd be important not to judge what happens tonight. It's really going to be a process. And he's going to have to do it quick here because there's urgency in the second half of the season. This team is going to have to play well. But tonight, I think it would be fair to say it's not going to be easy for him to come in and make a lot of quick adjustments and play a completely different style of hockey tonight.
Roman Josi quoted in the locker room saying, "It's a wake-up call for us players. We're excited to be a part of that solution now going forward, and it starts tonight." Robbie Stanley putting that out there. And, you know, to Robbie's point, he said this earlier, we've heard we need to wake up. We've heard that. That's been an ongoing message. Now that you have essentially cost somebody their job, two people, you've made a coaching change, I hope that's the wake-up call that they need. Because this team is way too talented to be in the position that they're in. Way too talented.
I think they all believe that. I think every player thinks that they can play much better in the second half as a team than they did in the first half. And I think the question for John Hines is going to be, how do I get the best out of this? What structural things? How do we play? And I think it comes down, honestly, to one thing, and that is giving up less goals and not sacrificing too much offensively to do so. This team can score. This team can make plays. The game against Anaheim on Sunday, they played terrible as a team, honestly. They played very poorly in the first two periods of the game. But they were good enough to make some plays and work the game back to overtime in a game they really probably didn't deserve to win, and they nearly stole. If Rocco Grimaldi maybe gets the puck two more inches across. I mean, he had it right on the line. It just didn't get over the line. They come home with 4 out of 4 on the road trip. But I think they all believe that the team can play better. Now, on John Hines, I know a lot of people are probably sitting out there going, why John Hines,
right?
He doesn't have this huge, long track record of success in the league. And this is a team that is built to win now. But in talking to some people that know John Hines, they feel that he is a great coach, that he will do very, very well. That's the idea. We'll have to wait and see if he's the right fit or not. But here's what I would tell all of the fans out there. Do not judge this guy. Don't sit there and say because he hasn't won a Stanley Cup or won a bunch of playoff series or won a lot of games or didn't do well with New Jersey, that means he won't do well here. I would ask that you look at when Barry Trotz was hired with the Predators. Nobody knew who Barry Trotz was.
Yep.
Nobody knew who Jim Montgomery was in the NHL when he took over the Stars last year. And there's a lot of examples. Jared Bednar, coach of the Avalanche. Nobody had heard of this guy. So there are very good coaches that have not had a chance to coach a good team. And I think that's what happened in New Jersey is he didn't have the horses there. But I think, remember the connection between New Jersey and Nashville. You have Ray Shiro. You have Tom Fitzgerald.
Jeff Kelty knows John Hines real well.
Right, and that's been Elliot Friedman's thing from the start. It's interesting, you know, weeks ago when John Hines was let go, Elliot Friedman mentioned to us in one of our interviews with him that he thought the connection between John Hines and Jeff Kelty would have him on the radar there. And, wow, isn't it crazy what's happened in a few weeks? But you have Kelty's connection. You have the Poyles' connection. So they know they've done their homework on John Hines as a profile. And they feel like he is a very, very good coach.
There are different examples you can look at of retreads or coaches that maybe didn't do well their first out. I mean, I'll use Mike Sullivan as an example. of someone that was with Boston, did okay, had some success, lost in, I think, 1 year he made it to the conference quarterfinals and they missed the playoffs and then he was out. 10 years later, he takes over in Pittsburgh, and what do they end up doing? Win back-to-back Stanley Cups.
And I think everybody would say he is a tremendous coach.
Yeah, and so I used this example with Darren a few minutes ago. This is baseball. Everybody scoffed when the Yankees hired Joe Torre. Everybody was like, why are they hiring Joe Torre? He's been terrible. He's a loser. Well, I think we know how that turned out. It turned out pretty well for the Yankees. So you got to give it time. I know it's very easy to go look at New Jersey and look at those stats and go, what is this? And you can't ignore it completely, but you also need to give it time and let it play out because this roster is so much better than what he had to work with there in New Jersey. He's Willie Donick, Chase McCabe. When we come back, we'll get back to the phones. Ross, hang with us. We'll get you on the other side. Again, live at Pete and Terry's Tavern here at Bridgestone Arena. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.
I've only wanted to desire to be standing next to your face.
Darren Donick and Chase, the gang is all here. Darren Donick and Chase, that's the gang. Back here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. David Poyle will speak with the media at 11:45. We will play that press conference for you live here in less than 30 minutes. 737-1025, 615-737-1025. Your reaction to what took place late in the afternoon yesterday. Peter Laviolette and Kevin McCarthy have been relieved of their coaching duties. Enter John Hines. The team has wrapped up Morningscape. By the way, there is quite the media presence here from Boston. And I guess they've got nothing better to do now. Yeah, the Patriots run is over. So they're like, okay, well, we'll talk a little bit more. Let's follow the Bruins around. They're pretty good.
Yeah, and there's a coaching change in Nashville. So
Celtics are pretty good. I guess they'll turn their attention to that. So there was a lot of media, as you can imagine, and, you know, local presence too because of what took place. So it almost had a playoff feel to it downstairs with so much media in the room. Was Willie, were you on last segment?
He did.
Okay.
Yeah, he came
so I didn't know
thoughts.
If you've had a chance to weigh in.
Yeah,
give your thoughts.
I weighed in some, and let me do what I think you did, Chase, right before I walked up, and definitely say that I'll miss Peter Laviolette and Kevin McCarthy. Those two guys were pros to me, always treated me very well, like I was one of the group. So I will always appreciate them. And I think as you get farther and farther removed to this, certainly this business is full of times where you make a change and you replace good coaches. But as you get farther removed, they will look back on this track record, what they did. It's a heck of a run that they made. It's unfortunate that this has happened here today, but I wouldn't doubt at all that Peter Laviolette, he'll probably take Kevin McCarthy with him somewhere. They'll get another opportunity and probably do their same thing. They've won a lot of games as a tandem, and I just want to say I enjoy dealing with them, and but I certainly understand the situation that the team is in. And this does happen in sports. I don't care if you're talking about hockey or basketball, college or pro or football. Sometimes you feel like you got to do something and you make a change.
You got to blame somebody. That's the unfortunate part of it, that when something isn't going right, somebody's got to fall on the sword.
Yeah. But you know, I the first thing you think about is them as people and their families. You know, I've really enjoyed getting to know them over the years. Just really, really good people. So tough day. That was my first thought. But here they are back at it. They got a big game tonight. Yep. This merry-go-round moves fast.
Let's go to Ross up in Ohio. Ross, welcome in.
Hey, gentlemen. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Thank you. Darren, I think you hit the nail on the head. Just to thank these gentlemen on their way out the door. But the question I have for you guys is, with 20 games or so until the trade deadline, what would you need to see to prevent us from being sellers at the deadline? And if we don't see that, could you see potentially going nuclear and giving away some of our top players if possible?
Okay. Thank you, Ross, for the phone call. Appreciate it. Now, this is what we were talking about in the first hour. Now that you've made a change like this, okay, because I think we've, well, at least the two of us weighing in, Robbie Stanley joined us for the first 30 minutes of the show, I at 5:35, I literally hit the floor. I mean, I was like in shock. I could not believe it. But now that – so that has been the change. To think that change – something was going to happen, you know, I think we all knew that something was going to happen because the season had not been going the way everybody anticipated. They've basically been on the outside looking in for the first half of the season. But now that the change came at the cost of the head coach, now – and I know I heard a lot of the players, including Pecorine, Roman Josi, others down in the room, they know. The players are honest and – they've said now we know the attention is on us because now people are going to say, okay, now it's up to you to perform. And we talked about this is a new lease on life for some of these guys. Kyle Turris in the relationship, whatever that relationship was, whether it was broken,
right,
what have you. Now he's got a new lease on life with a new perspective, a new coach, a new relationship. Guys like Granlin, guys that need to pick it up. We'll see if John Hines can get the most out of them.
Yeah, I mean, and that's going to be the big thing is to see these guys that maybe haven't been playing to their full ability, can John Hines bring that out in them? And also, here's another part of this conversation. Dan Muse and Dan Lambert, you know, what are they? Are we going to see something different out of those two guys now that they have different leadership? You know, Peter Laviolette is a coach that had his hands on everything. I mean, he has said it. Like, everything goes through him. So does John Hines back off a little bit and let Lambert and Muse kind of do their thing to see what he has in assistants?
I think they are assistants for a reason. I think the head coach is going to have an idea.
But you got to evaluate.
But I think this is just my take on it. I do think that they will – adjust on how they play slightly. There's going to be some tinkering on how they go about it. I don't know if that will mean, you know, the line combinations or just a, you know, how they defend, you know, their systems, their structure. But I would think there's going to be some adjustments, and that will be the decision of John Hines. And I think Dan Lambert and Dan Muse will adjust accordingly. And they'll have their input, I would imagine. And then, you know, from there, it is going to be up to the players, right? That ultimately the players are going to have to play better and play as a team. But I think in shaking things up, that is what you're doing. You're having a little bit of a philosophical change to try to get more out of what's been there.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly.
Like, you're not firing the coach just to try to get a jolt of energy.
You're changing the system.
It's got to be a little bit of a change in system as well to think that that's going to produce a better result, and remains to be seen whether that will be the case or not.
To Ross's point asking about making moves and trading players, Elliot Friedman, who comes on every Thursday at 1 o'clock, has said that. I mean, he has thrown out names, Kyle Turris, Craig Smith, that David Poile has been trying to shop players. When you look at the Predators roster, the UFAs, which get moved around a lot towards the trade deadline, so the unrestricted free agents next year, Mikael Granlund, Craig Smith, Rocco Grimaldi, Colin Blackwell, Dan Hamhuis, Yannick Weber, Matt Irwin. That's what you got from a UFA standpoint. Not a ton of value with those players. Now, Craig Smith, as of late, I think his value is going up.
I think Mikael Granlund and Craig Smith have a lot of value.
You think Granlund? Potential.
Absolutely. If you look at his track record, I mean, he's going to – I think he would – but I don't think that is at all – the mindset of this team right now. Today, they are not thinking of being sellers. Now, in a few weeks, if they tank, then you have no choice but to think about it. The other thing that you have to consider is, since they don't have a lot of room under the salary cap, is there a hockey trade that is made where you're not just trading future assets to get another guy?
Yeah.
Are you trading a little bit of offense for defense or something like that? And I think that might be more what's in play right now, because I think – but you have to look at who you can move. As we've said, Kyle Turris's contract is such that it won't be easy to move that if you wanted to. And you can say that they have a surplus of centers.
Right.
Right? And you look at what Yakov Trenin has done coming in there. That guy looks like he is a player. So it's a little crowded at forward right now. So could you make the argument, hey, let's package a forward here or there and get another defenseman? I think that is possible.
Which is probably what they would need. Elliot was on, actually it was nice enough to come on Preds Insiders last night when all of this broke. And he did throw out, he goes, I don't think they'd want to do it, but a guy that has a ton of value right now that the Predators could move and get something, you know, big in return or get, you know, substantial in return is Nick Bonino.
Now, no way.
I don't.
Way too important
of a player. I wouldn't
walk
away from
not,
him right now.
They will not trade him, I don't believe,
but if
at
you
all,
go,
unless you're out of it.
Yeah, if you're out of it and you go into.
This team's not going to be out of it. This team is going to be trying
well,
to win this
not.
Year. There is no way they are going to do
something like that.
Really,
they've been trying to win all year. Like, I don't think they're just starting now.
But they're not in last place in the league, like the Blues, who were talking about trading almost anybody on the roster at this time last year.
Right.
And then all of a sudden things change. And a lot can change between now and then, I agree. But as we sit here today, to me, that's not one that you would move. But I do think it's not a big move, but maybe an extra defenseman somewhere, a veteran guy that could take a little pressure off of Dante Favreau, that might be.
That's a big thing. I think
to
they
me,
rushed
him. They're not lacking talent. This no. team is not a team that's sitting there. They have enough talent to win the Stanley Cup, I think. But it's a tinker. It's a tweak. It's not a major move that has to happen for them to. And I think it's just a matter of getting on the same page and ironing out their game and being
more
consistent.
It's more than just a tweak and a tinker. It's
with
about
personnel?
It's about guys
with talent
who are
level?
Getting paid to be elite. They have to up their production.
100%.
Period.
100%.
You get paid to be elite, you have to be elite. You have to produce.
But it's not like this team can't score. So people are going to say, well, Johansson hasn't scored enough, Duchesne hasn't scored enough. And I get that. Those guys
yep.
should have more
well,
points, I think.
They're
getting paid to score.
Yeah.
But the team is scoring.
Yeah.
The team is giving up too many goals. That is the issue. So it's when I'm saying the team has to play better, that's part of it.
And special
it's
teams.
Special
teams
the
has
special
get
teams
way
has
better.
Got to be better.
It's atrocious.
No question. The penalty kill recently
has really been
bad. It's got to be
and
better.
And here's an idea. You know, if your penalty kill stinks – stay out of the box. I mean, that would help it.
That was
it
that
would
really
hurt help
them
it.
The other night.
Yeah, no doubt.
Especially when you don't have Colton Sissons, Ryan
you have
Ellis.
Penalty killers, right?
Your key penalty
killers.
We're on
killers. IR.
Yeah. Dan Hamhuis wasn't in the lineup the other night. He's a key penalty killer. Dante Favreau was out. They were awfully thin, and they took five penalties.
Yep.
And that's you could argue that's how they lost the game.
Corey, you're up next. Welcome in.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I had a couple thoughts, you know, to your point, at what point do you said somebody's got to be blamed, but I don't think it always has to be the coach. I like looking at the Steve Kerr model of coaching where, you know, he's got adults that are professionals that are getting paid millions of dollars to play the game of basketball, and he really gives them the majority of the reins to do what they know they need to do to win. And to your point, I mean, these guys are getting paid tons of money. You know, look at the Blues last year. I mean, weren't they close to last place right before the playoffs? And some switch flipped in that team. I don't know whether it was the coaching or the players themselves decided to just start winning games. But in my opinion, I think there should have been more changes to the players or something.
Well, what do you change?
I mean,
when you say change players, well, you don't fire players. What do you
yeah,
change?
You're right, but.
If you got a guy
point,
making $8 million a year,
comes into play.
What right? But what do you do? I mean, you're stuck. I mean, a lot of these guys have 6, 7, 8 years left on $8 million per year. I mean, what you're stuck. You trade them.
Trade them. I mean, if you're not producing, if you're getting paid X amount of dollars to produce goals or whatever it is, and you're not doing it, then we're going to find somebody else.
The problem is,
have a hard time
it's
blaming
hard.
The coach every time.
It's very hard to make trades if you wanted to do that. It's hard to do because of everybody's issues with the salary cap. There's not a lot of flexibility. So you would be trading somebody and either getting not much back or trading your person you're not happy with to another team for a person that they're not happy with. And you get a whole new set of
True.
Issues there. So it's not easy to wheel and deal in hockey moves. But I do think that could happen. There could be another move down the road, but this is the move right now they felt like they needed to make. And I just want to keep stressing, someday, it might be 10 years from now, and probably a lot less than that, you're going to look back and say, hey, Peter Laviolette, Kevin McCarthy, they did one heck of a job in their 5.5 years. It's easy to get, because right now we're in this moment, right? We're in this halfway through the season. What's going on? Teams underachieved a little bit. They're not playing up to their capability. those guys take the fall. But if you look at the 5.5 years,
well,
you got a lot of return.
You didn't hear the end of the first hour, and that's exactly what I said.
Yeah.
I said, look, PK Subban, a lot of fans approached us and either called into the show or reached out to us on Twitter, came up to us in the arena and said, you know, they were really frustrated with PK Subban. And maybe it was time, okay? But we said on this show, don't forget the 3 years. The 3 years he was here, it was very, very good. And then I said, Peter Laviolette, 5.5 years. A lot of you, I know, I've been talking to a lot of you. A lot of you felt like, and not all, but a lot have felt like, and I get it, it's natural for fans to say when things are going wrong, it's time for a new voice. It's time for a fresh voice. People thought that they were ready, you know, that it was time for a coaching change. But with that being said, and maybe it was time, but do not forget the 5.5 years. It's been really good the 5.5 years Peter Laviolette and Kevin McCarthy were here. We have been talking about playoff hockey every single season. I said, on his watch the second week of April when we were talking about the Stanley Cup playoffs that did not include the Predators. There is none. There is no example of that. So both cases, maybe it was time. Well, time will tell us, okay? But no matter how you felt, let's not diminish the 3 years of PK Subban, the 5.5 years of Peter Laviolette and Kevin McCarthy, because the bottom line is in those windows – it's been very, very good in this market and for this franchise. We'll come back. Don't forget David Poile speaking at 11:45. We will carry that live. You're listening to Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're live at Pete and Terry's Tavern. Tonight it's the Predators and the Bruins. One game homestand, and then they'll be back out on the road Thursday night in Chicago against the Blackhawks. We are talking about the coaching change that took place yesterday afternoon, and now John Hines, it's going to be up to him to see if he can turn things around in the second half of the season. And tonight officially starts the second half of the season, Willie. So it's going to be interesting. And you don't get to ease into this thing. Typically, that's how it works in the NHL. There's really no nights off, as we have talked about. Mike Rupp, who we have certainly had on the show before, NHL Network, says on Twitter, I like the fit with the Predators' hiring of John Hines. He runs a high-tempo practice that demands pace in the team game. He said Nashville has the talent to take it to another level.
I talked to a lot of the Predator brass downstairs, and you see the connection, the New Jersey connection. Tom Fitzgerald, Ray Shiro, Elliot Friedman mentioned to us about a month ago when John Hines was let go from New Jersey, the connection between John Hines and Jeff Kelty. And I think they know John Hines very, very well. And so the return that I hear, the impressions I get, is that he is very highly regarded. I think it would be a mistake for people on the outside to say, well, look at his one loss record with New Jersey, and, you know, why would they hire a guy like that? A couple of years ago, he was in the running for Coach of the Year. That was a very overachieving team that made the playoffs with New Jersey. It's still, as you can see, a roster that is not a really loaded roster where they should win a lot, right? They're in an awfully tough division and still with a lot of young players, and yet they had a really good year a couple of years ago. So I think it would be wise to wait and see. And then the other thing I mentioned to Chase before you got down here was tonight you're not going to see everything that you're going to see in the coming weeks, right? It's almost impossible to come in and say, okay, let's wave a magic wand and here's everything that I'm trying to get across to you guys. He can't know everything about every player tonight. He can't get across to them, even if he wanted to, all the maybe tweaks he might have in mind for how he wants to have this team play. Does he want to play just as much of an attacking style? Do you want to pull back? Is it going to be, you know, there's no way that you can do that right now. Tonight it's going to have to be just a little bit of feel, and you got to hope that the team just rises to the occasion, because as you said, you're playing one of the best teams in the league tonight.
Well, there has been success. I mean, think about it. There's been already, what now, does that make the sixth coaching fire this season, right? Sixth in the league already. And in a lot of cases, the fresh voice – came in and got things going right away. They had success right away. I mean, look at the guy in Toronto. Even he's still – they've labeled him as the interim, right, Sheldon Keefe? I looked recently at his record. I think since he took over, he was like 15-6 since Babcock had been fired. You know, we do see that. You're right. It's going to be difficult. It's going to take time. But yeah. You do see the new guys and the new voice come in, and things do turn around.
You also don't have a lot of players. All the homegrown players on this team, which there are a lot of, they've never been through a coaching change
yep.
in the middle of the season, ever. In the NHL.
I know, isn't that amazing?
I mean, you think about Craig Smith and Austin Watson and Roman Josi and Ryan Ellis, guys who have only played for the Predators. This is new territory for them, a transition in the middle of the season. So it's hard to know what you're going to see, at least in the short term. You hope. I mean, these are all the things that David Poile had to weigh when he decided to make this change.
Hal Gill is a part of our broadcasting team tweeted out, a great hire for a team that has been inconsistent. Hines will be a fresh voice and can give the team some structure that will help them win now. And he's a guy that, you know,
well, I talked to Hal a lot.
Spent 16 years in locker room, so yeah. He understands the dynamic. He played for a lot of coaches, and look, sometimes it just, simply put, it is about a new voice, a fresh perspective, right?
Yeah, moving the pieces around. It's a combination of all those things. That's what you hope for. It doesn't always work.
Right.
But as you said, a lot of it is going to ultimately be on the players, right? They knew they had to play better regardless of who the coach was going to be. You can't use it as a security blanket. It doesn't automatically happen, right? They've got to take some responsibility, a lot of responsibility. And that is what I heard from the locker room today when I was down there.
Well, and that's refreshing because I want to make sure these guys know that. I feel like they do. I mean, but, you know, David Poile has paid a lot of money to a handful of these players to build the core. We always talk about the core group that the Predators have. Well, he's built that over the last few years. Well, now they got to start playing like it. You got to play up to what you're being paid. And that's just kind of how this works.
It may not be goals and assists per se.
No, it's overall play.
Because, as we said, if you look at the goals – you might sit there and go, well, why doesn't Matt Duchene have more goals or Ryan Johansson have more points? But collectively, they're scoring enough.
Yeah,
it's gonna be a different way. It's just the formula has to be a little different. They get the same amount of goals, maybe even a tenth of a goal less over time. But the key stat that has to come down is the goals against.
Right.
Right. And so that's where Hal is talking about with the structure, the tweaks in the structure. Might be the key to getting that down. Maybe just a little different attitude, a little different way of going at it, a fresh point of view. Maybe that's the ticket to getting the goals against where it's been year after year. And that was under Peter Laviolette. It's not like Peter Laviolette was sitting there going, guys, just go ahead. Fast break. Up and down. Give up a lot. Score a lot. That's not how it happened. But it's just it hasn't been going well in that way this year. They have had too many games where things have snowballed against them in the game. Just the last game was a great example, right? They had a bad first period. They still managed to be tied at the end of it somehow, thanks to UC Saros. They end up taking the lead, and then they have a parade to the penalty box and can't stop them for 5.5 minutes, and next thing you know, you're down by 2 goals. That's happened, 7, 8, 9 times in this first half of the season. That's too many times. And if you have the structure to fall back on, if you have the mental toughness – so it's a combination of all these things. That shouldn't happen to a good team that many times.
Well, I know we're waiting for
the
press conference.
We're on standby now, right?
Somebody asked a really good question on Twitter. What about, we've praised the video coaches so much, right, and how the challenges that Peter Laviolette would make. And somebody's asked, do you think that they will be retained and be a part of this change?
Yes, as will Ben Vanderklok, the – goaltender coach. Those guys are all intact. So that it is going to be one new coach and one new assistant. I don't know if they have announced the assistant coach. Have they done that? There will be another assistant coach.
Oh, there will be?
Yes.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen
it. A former player who has been in the system. I don't want to scoop David Poile because in the next minute.
Now you've just kind
of thrown it out there. There's a member of the staff that has been in the realm for this year that will also, because if you look at who they have left over, they don't really have a former player mm-hmm. in there. So it's nice to have that perspective, that conduit to a player. And so there will be a former player.
Does his last name rhyme with pickle?
No.
Oh, well, there you go.
Is Hartnell leaving NHL Network?
No.
Brent Peterson's returning to the bench.
And it is not Mike Fisher.
I was about to go there.
Paul Skrbina asked Kyle Turris what his relationship was like with Peter Laviolette. His answer, and he writes after a pause, quote, "It's a business." That's all he said.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Not surprising.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to have a
listen. I don't think there's any question that he would be among a player that is ready for a fresh start, right? But now it's up to him.
Yep.
Exactly. Now it's up to him.
You've taken away an excuse, reason, now, whatever word you want to use.
Who knows if his role will change and he is utilized different. That's
right.
Something they have to figure out. But it can't all be about Kyle Turris,
right?
It can't just be Kyle Turris starts playing better and everybody else is the same. It's got to be a collective team.
We're good. Here we go.
All right, let's go downstairs. Let's hear from Predators general manager David Poile.
Personally, thank Peter Laviolette and Kevin McCarthy for unprecedented success. Again, to start from a personal standpoint, the last 5.5 years have probably been the best and most successful 5 years that I've been in the hockey business. Before Peter and Kevin got here, there was no banners in our building. There was no Stanley Cup playoff run. I believe over Peter and Kevin's term here in Nashville that we have the sixth best record in the National Hockey League. Two conference Central Division banners, Stanley Cup finals, 300-point seasons, 32 playoff wins. We only had 19 before that time. Peter was a finalist in 2015 for the Coach of the Year. The list goes on and on. So from a personal standpoint, and I think for our organization, for our fans, I'd like to thank Peter and Kevin. It was really an exciting time in our organization. Having said that, here I am today because we made a coaching change. I want to play my coaching card a little bit here, and that over my time, I think you all know that I would like to work with people rather than to change people. And myself and our organization worked as hard as we could with our coaches, with our staff, to try to get our team going in the right direction this year. There is no question, again, for me personally, this has been the hardest year that I've ever had, because we have been totally unable to meet expectations of for ourselves on the ice, I think for our fans. And there's been a lot of criticism of our play. There has been a lot of inconsistencies with our play. So many games that we've played this year, I felt that we were going to win the game, and for whatever happened, it was that win or that point was taken away from us. We can go over the last game in Anaheim where we had an awful first period, got 21 shots against us. We can go to the third period where we came back from two goals down, and it appeared that we were going to win the game. We take a penalty with 2.5 minutes to go in the game. Where's the focus? How does that possibly happen? I've met with the players this morning, and I've talked to a few guys. My message to the players was that I'm responsible for this. I'm responsible for this change, and I take that responsibility. But you as players have to share in the responsibility of what's taking place today. I don't want to be a cliche or to use a cliche, but they often say that you change a coach because you can't, or it doesn't make sense to change 20 players. Our team is way better than it's performed this year, but we have obviously some team concepts, systems that aren't working as effective as they should. And we also have some individuals that are playing way below their level of potential or the expectations that we have. So it's been a hard year. There's a lot of things that are not gone well with our team. And I'm very sorry that we had to make a coaching change. But as I feel today, I thought long and hard about this. And I felt if we have any chance to play better in the second half of the season to get into the playoffs, to play to our potential, that we need a new voice. We need some changes. I don't think we need a lot of changes, but we need some changes. With that, I will take questions on this.
When did you know that a change was necessary? When did it become clear in your mind?
You know, first of all, I'd like to say, like, I think it was a week ago I did an interview, and I was seemed like it got a lot of headlines. Like, you know, Poile says that he's not going to make a change at this time. I think you have to understand that with my job, it's on a daily basis. We're evaluating everything. We do ratings every day on players. I mean, I talk to the coaches, you know, every day, multiple times a day. We go over different things. I mean, this goes back to our playoff exit in, you know, in the playoffs last year, to be very bottom line. It goes to our meetings in the off season with players and coaches, and it just, you know, and then you build up some momentum and you feel good about situations. Our training camp was terrific. It was very productive. It was somewhat relaxed. We got to look at a lot of younger players. Our season started off on an unbelievable note. As you remember, last year, all we talked about in these meetings was how bad our power play was, and bang, we get off to a great start, 8-3, scoring, power plays, playing well. And then what happened? Duchesne got hurt. Forsberg got hurt. It seemed just kind of unravel a bit at that time. So, again, we worked on different things, but then we lost, what, 5 or 6 games in a row. Then we fought back, you know, really hard just before Christmas on that road trip. We got 3 wins and an overtime loss in Ottawa. And, I mean, I think we felt that maybe we were turning the corner. And then Pittsburgh games were really disappointing. The Winter Classic was somewhat devastating on the national stage. I mean, it's a combination of a lot of things. So it just felt that we just were not going to turn the corner. And again, in Anaheim, to not let anybody off the hook. I mean, our best players, other than Roman Josi, were not our best players. And, you know, that's one of the visuals that I have when I'm looking at our team. It always starts with your best players. And our best players weren't our best players, haven't been our best players, and they must become our best players if we're going to be successful.
How responsible do you think a coach is, David, for players or an individual player to be motivated and to perform at his level?
I think that's his job to do that. And again, with Peter, I mean, I think he's a fantastic motivator. And it goes back to what I said in my opening remarks, and it's reflected in our wins and losses. And we've had a lot of guys that have had career years here. This year, for whatever reason, I'm saying it was a very difficult year. I would think if Peter was sitting here, he would say the same thing. I mean, it's not for lack of trying, and it's not for lack of having meetings and discussing, confronting individuals. It just wasn't happening. I mean, I think everybody in this room who's been covering us for a long time would say that we've underperformed to this point of the season. I sit and talk to you all the time and do weekly interviews and what have you, and I still believe in this team. Every week I still believe in this team. It's just we have not hit on all cylinders.
David,
yeah, go ahead.
Did it concern you at all that many of the players that you've acquired over the past few years, whether through trades or free agent signings, Kyle Turris, Mikhail Granlund, Ryan Hartman, Wayne Simmonds, have not performed as well as they did in their previous stops when they came?
Absolutely. You guys can grade me if you want. I grade myself every day. And again, you look for, you know, for players you think fit in. I mean, we can go over every individual. I mean, Kyle Turris, when he came in here for a 20-game stretch with Kevin Fiala and And Craig Smith, he was our best player. He was better than Ryan Johansson. That was our number one line. And then different things have taken place where he has not been as effective or hasn't been used. He's been scratched, a lot of different things. I mean, I talked to the players today, and again, not another cliche, but it's true. I mean, what's ever happened to this point, it's a clean slate. I've told the players that, you know, I've talked to John Hines in terms of all the things that I wanted to talk about. And, of course, we've talked about players. But I don't want to go too far to say I think of this player A as he's a problem of our team or he's this, this, and this. I want John Hines to figure that out. I want that player to know that he has a fresh start. So any player that you want to talk about, yeah, we have underperforming players right now. And guys that have had, as you just said, a better track record either with other teams or at a different time with us. It's very disappointing to be sitting here today doing this. And I'm really hoping that, I mean, we got plenty of time, but we have to see a change. And it's really consistency, I think. It's been sharper mentally. I mean, just we make some mistakes that are just, I can't believe it's happening, the time of game it's happening, the comebacks other teams have against us, just different things.
David, with Harris and Granlund in particular, do you think Peter's system did not suit them perfectly?
I couldn't say that. I'm hoping that players can adapt to different ways, et cetera. I couldn't honestly say that.
When did you inform Peter of the decision?
Yesterday we flew back from Anaheim, and I met with Ian Kevin when we got back here at that time.
Craig Smith said that he's not the only player who said it, but he said Sunday that he felt systematically maybe the players are overthinking things too much, and that kind of started getting in your head. Was that evident to you that maybe the system wasn't working, that they currently were running for a majority of the players that you guys have? Because several of the guys have said.
Yeah, I think anything is open for discussion right now because, you know, a lot of things weren't working as effectively. So I think there's a lot of frustration in our team and in our players. And again, everything that we're going to talk about, every question leads back to the same thing to me, is that it was time to make a change and to go in a different direction. So if our new coach wants to have a different line combinations, wants to scratch different players, wants to play a different system, it's his job. And it was just working so with us, and it's time to have something a little bit different.
Two more questions.
These guys were young guys, the core of this team for a while. Now they've been locked up to long-term extensions. You talk about being sharp mentally. Do you worry that complacency kind of set in with some of these guys based upon contracts and situations that maybe you guys gave them?
That absolutely could be part of it. I would be totally embarrassed of an individual if that was the case. But you can certainly make a case. I mean, we've signed our team. We're happy with our team. We've got some really top players. We wanted to keep the band together. We talked to players, talked to coaches, that we were sort of all in this together to try to keep this together. I mean, we're an older team, but we really don't have any age problems in our team in terms of a compete standpoint, or this should be our last year or the window of opportunity that people talk about. But like I said before, anything's open for discussion, and if that's, you know, your thought or your opinion, you could be right, and shame on that player or those players that are not playing as well because they're comfortable. If I come to that conclusion, I will do everything I can to change that.
David, Peter has had success everywhere he's been, but do you believe that over time, as players grow with the coach, that the message can kind of start getting distorted or tuned out after a while?
Well, shelf life. Again, as a general manager and only making a few coaching changes over the years, I really resist that. I never think it's one person's problem. It's all about that. And I think I've said that clearly in my remarks today, that Peter and Kevin deserve a lot of credit for where we are. I would like to have been happy to work with Peter and Kevin for a lot longer. It's not them. It may be a little part of them. It's not them. It's our players. They have to make up their mind to play the way they can. And if a new voice changes that, that's great in one way. Shame on the situation that had to happen. But, again, we've seen that with in every sport. I've been a little bit of a outlier on that to stay with people. But, you know, I just it's my decision. I just felt it was time, and I want to see this play up to our abilities.
Thanks, everyone. We'll be back in just a couple minutes to introduce our new head coach.
Oil Predators general manager downstairs. We will step away, and we will come back and hear from the new voice, John Hines. On the other side, Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.